Hello and welcome to the Byron York Show, the No Chit Chat podcast. We like to get right into it. And what we're going to get into today is, well, obviously it's the January 6th committee hearing, but it's something a little more specific about that. It's the House Committee's grand unified theory of January 6th, which emerged in its first hearing, its heavily hyped and publicized first hearing. So, start off, you knew something was up when the leaks about the House Democratic January 6th committee began to change. About a month ago, Jamie Raskin, who's a Democratic committee member, said the hearings would, quote, blow the roof off the House. Wow, that sounds big. The weeks that followed were filled with hype about the upcoming hearing, which would be held in prime time, maximum TV exposure, and would be produced with showbiz expertise by a former president of ABC News. So the House Democrats were really going all out on this, and there's just so much hype about it. And then, right as it was about to happen, comes the downplay. There was an article in the Washington Post published just hours before the hearing began, and it reported, I'm going to read from it, quote, committee aides sought to temper expectations of any shocking revelations during Thursday's hearing and instead frame the session as an opening argument. Now, this article quoted an anonymous committee aide who said, a lot of this has been reported and bits and pieces of it have been shared. Our aim is to tie all that together in a comprehensive narrative. Wow. Now, that is a long way from blowing the roof off the House. I mean, what happened to blowing the roof off the House? Well, as it turned out, when showtime finally came on Thursday night, the roof of the House stayed right where it was. It was not blown off. Now, as that anonymous aide had said, the committee offered bits and pieces of stuff you already knew about January 6th. Now, I will say there was, as I listened to it, there was one bit of actual news, and that is when Liz Cheney, the Nancy Pelosi-appointed Republican vice chair of the committee, said that a Republican representative, Scott Perry, quote, contacted the White House in the weeks after January 6th to seek a presidential pardon. Multiple other Republican congressmen also sought presidential pardons for their roles in attempting to overturn the 2020 election. So that was a quote from Liz Cheney. Now, there have been news reports about other members of Congress doing that, but as far as I know, the Scott Perry news was news, although it wasn't big enough to justify the media hype, and we haven't heard from Scott Perry about it. So perhaps we put it in the category of big, if true. So the panel, the committee, guided by this former ABC News chief, a man named James Goldston, played a lot of video from January 6th. Now, it had been breathlessly billed in media reports as never before seen. Tonight, never before seen video of January 6th. And indeed, some of it had, in fact, not been seen. But as you might have been able to predict, it looked a lot like the hundreds of hours of video from January 6th that have been seen. Now, this actually recalled a situation with the committee last year. It held its actual first hearing. You know, this one on Thursday night was talked about as the first hearing of the committee. Well, actually, there was one in July 2021. It's kind of a messaging event, but it was so-called first hearing. And they were promising, amazingly enough, at the time, they were promising, just like they did now, lots of never-before-seen video. Much discussion, never-before-seen video. Turned out that the video they showed was, I'm going to read something from Axios at the time, similar to the chilling 13-minute video Democrats aired during Donald Trump's second impeachment trial, end quote. So they aired never-before-seen video, which looked a lot like earlier video. Now, if you're at all interested in January 6th, or have been at any time in the last year and a half, you might have seen many media compilations of video where they collected all sorts of video and put them together in a timeline and a narrative. So you may have seen those. So nothing in the video that was presented on Thursday night, the never-before-seen video surprised anybody or made news. Now, it was striking. The Capitol riot included ugly and brutal scenes of protesters fighting police, and they are still ugly and brutal today. So we saw some of the ugliness and the brutality of protesters fighting hand-to-hand with improvised weapons, fighting the police. It was an ugly scene, was then, is now. But the never-before-seen video did not really add a lot to it. So the news was not terribly newsworthy in the sense of revealing something that we didn't know before. And the pictures weren't terribly new in the sense of adding to our understanding of what took place on January 6th. Okay, so a lot of the hype, well, let's just say it didn't live up to the hype. It was oversold, and it didn't live up to it. But the January 6th committee hearing did tell us about one thing, and that is the thinking of the January 6th committee. And the main focus, as revealed Thursday night, is Trump, Trump, Trump. Now, members are going to look at groups like the Proud Boys, the Oath Keepers, that formed a small part of the crowd at the Capitol on January 6th, have been charged with seditious conspiracy. But the committee is interested in those groups only to the extent that the committee will attempt to tie those groups directly to Trump and show that the president conspired with them to set off the riot as part of his grand plan to remain in office after losing the presidential election to Joe Biden. So in the big picture, what the committee is trying to do is to connect two separate sets of events. First is the riot, and the second is the effort of a group of lawyers around Trump, led by John Eastman, we've talked about him before, who tried to come up with a way for Congress to throw out the electoral votes from enough of the states that Trump lost to change the final result of the election. So it appears that the committee has come up with a grand unified theory of January 6th, which is that Trump enlisted the rioters to cause such a disturbance that Congress would be forced to go along with the Eastman plan. It was all one giant conspiracy hatched and executed by Donald Trump. Now, the problem is the committee is going to have to show a lot of connections that might not exist and are at the very least currently unknown. Now, first, it's going to have to show that Trump worked with the Proud Boys or the Oath Keepers, that he worked with them. And then they're going to have to show that the Proud Boys or the Oath Keepers actually made the January 6th riot happen. And that could be a very tough assignment given the organic nature of the motivations of hundreds of rioters. And then the committee is going to have to show that Trump incited the riots, which of course Democrats call the insurrection, specifically to use the rioters as muscle to force the Vice President, Mike Pence, and Congress into accepting the John Eastman electoral vote plan. Now, the committee apparently believes that it can clear that final hurdle. It can prove incitement by showing interviews with rioters who later said they felt that Trump, when he used Twitter to promote the rally on January 6th, had personally invited them to break into the Capitol and go on a rampage. Okay, maybe that doesn't make a lot of sense to you, but it makes a lot of sense to the January 6th committee. The committee has to prove two conspiracies, the riot conspiracy and the electoral votes conspiracy, and then show that they were actually one big conspiracy. That's what they're going to show. That is the grand unified theory of January 6th. Now, it's going to be easy to convince part of the American electorate that is already inclined to believe it. Now, it might be a lot more difficult with a larger group of Americans who are not immediately inclined to believe that. Now, part of the problem the committee is going to have in proving this grand unified theory is the nature of the committee that they have actually set up. And we're going to talk about that next.
Did a bad accounting rule lead to the 2008 financial crisis? I'm Bill Walton. On the latest edition of The Bill Walton Show, I'll tackle that question. I'll also share my insights from decades in the private equity world and explain what it takes to be successful. Join John Tamney of Real Clear Markets and me as we break down the memoir of Blackstone's Stephen Schwarzman, Follow The Bill Walton Show at Apple, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Okay, I said I was going to talk about how the actual nature and structure of the January 6th committee creates problems for Democrats as they try to prove their grand unified theory of January 6th. First, though, I do want to say, if you've been listening to the podcast, enjoying it, maybe learning from the podcast, it would be really, really great if you could subscribe to the podcast. You can do it at iTunes, anywhere you get your podcasts, and really, really appreciate it. So, the committee has to prove these two conspiracies, the riot conspiracy and the electoral votes conspiracy, and then it has to show that there were actually one big conspiracy. That's the task. So how to do that? First of all, those things need to be actually true, which may just not be the case. But how do you prove something? The best congressional investigations do two things. First, they release the information they have found to the public in unedited form, as well as in a polished final form like a final report. Now, mostly, that means releasing the transcripts of interviews. And then second, they subject the evidence they have collected to an adversarial process, which in this case, a congressional investigation, means that both Democrats and Republicans have a chance to examine the evidence and to discuss it. Okay. It's an adversarial process that works on Capitol Hill. Now, the House January 6th committee has done neither of those things. Now, there's no need to go into the circumstances that led to the current makeup of the committee. I've discussed that before, but the fact is, all the members were appointed by House Speaker Nancy Pelosi. And the committee's two Pelosi-appointed Republicans appear to be in complete lockstep with the seven Pelosi-appointed Democrats. Now, you may have heard, seen some headlines, reports of disagreements inside the committee. They disagree on things like whether they should agitate for the abolition of the Electoral College. As far as the story the committee is trying to tell, they seem to be in complete lockstep. Okay. Given that, the committee has now started presenting its findings. Now, members say they've interviewed around 1,000 people. That is a lot of interviews. Now, were they sit-down depositions that have transcripts? Were they discussions at a coffee shop? Somebody scribbled down some notes? Were they phone conversations? Democrats have the power of the majority, plus the two lockstep Republicans have the power of the majority. They do not have to disclose such information, and so far they have not. So what that means is you only hear what they want you to hear, and there's no one with a different point of view to question what has been presented. So at the hearing, they presented snippets of what some of their witnesses have told them. For example, the committee presented all of 11 seconds of an interview with Ivanka Trump, president's daughter. The committee presented 26 seconds of an interview with Jason Miller, a Trump advisor, and Miller immediately, while the hearing was still going on, complained that the 26 seconds they had aired did not completely represent what he had actually said. He's probably got a point, because they just picked 26 seconds out of it, and you don't know what else he said. And there's no Republican on the committee who has a different point of view, who has access to the transcript of what Miller said or what Ivanka Trump said, to bring up in a committee hearing an objection. He could say, I think you're emphasizing the wrong thing here. Or he said something else that contradicted this later. There's nobody to say that. There's no adversarial process. So what else did those witnesses say in their time before the committee? We don't know. Maybe they said something that a committee member with a different perspective, if there were one, might choose to emphasize. But we don't know. And the majority has no obligation to reveal it. As they say, the House is a majoritarian institution. The majority can pretty much do what it wants. And Democrats have a narrow majority now, but it is a majority, and they control how things work in the House. They have no obligation to reveal it. So, after Thursday night, I think we're going to see a situation repeated in coming weeks where we will be presented snippets of information and have no context for it and have no representative on the committee who is aware of the larger body of information who can raise questions. Can you imagine members of the committee debating each other in public, have a hearing, and two of them get into an argument with each other over the meaning of something. It's just inconceivable with this committee because they are in such lockstep. And they're in lockstep, apparently, behind the grand unified theory. And that is what they're trying to prove. So they want the public to believe and accept the grand unified theory without actually presenting all the evidence they have. Now, will they ultimately present it? Well, you know, in the first Trump impeachment, they conducted interviews in secret, made transcripts in secret, didn't let Republicans talk about them. And then when the hearings came, they did release almost all, but not all, of the interviews. There's at least one that they've kept completely secret. And remember, of course, they relied in the beginning on the testimony of a whistleblower whose identity remains secret to this day. They sought to remove the President of the United States on the basis of a process instigated by an anonymous whistleblower. So they have no obligation to make public any of this stuff and to make public everything a witness might have said. And yet, they're going to use that to try to prove this extraordinary thing, this grand unified theory of January 6th. Will it work? We'll see. Obviously, I sound skeptical. There's going to be, I think, six more hearings coming up in pretty short order. So we'll see more of what they say. But we'll really know they're serious if they actually released the larger body of information that they have gathered, which I am a little skeptical that they'll actually do. So that's what I wanted to talk about, the grand unified theory of January 6th. So glad you could listen. Always appreciate it when you do, and hope you can join us again soon for another edition of the Byron York Show.
A man is arrested for trying to kill Justice Brett Kavanaugh. San Francisco voters recall their pro-crime district attorney, and the World Bank says the economy is going to be bad for the rest of the decade. I'm Greg Corumbus. Join Jim Garrity of National Review and me each weekday for the Three Martini Lunch podcast. We'll give you the good, bad, and crazy news of the day for conservatives, and hopefully a lot of laughs too. Join us. Follow the Three Martini Lunch on Apple, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts.